Mayer, and it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to you, lurking conservatives. Good morning to the gentle people. Good morning to New York City and the rest of the world here on September 12th. Good morning to you, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
You know, there's a lot of things going on. We're going to get into the New York primaries tomorrow. We're going to talk about the John Roberts confirmation, probably more tomorrow. But today, really, we are going to continue a bit of reflection around September 11th and around, you know, what happened in this city and what happened yesterday. You know, I was watching TV, Riley, yesterday, and I was pretty surprised to see that most of the cable outlets, most of the basic cable outlets, cable news, really did not stay at ground zero for the ceremony for very long. And they were there for a few minutes, and then they cut away to the Pentagon March, where that horrendous bit of propaganda and false jingoistic I don't even know what you would call it, but it was just a big attempt to link 9/11 and Iraq again. And here in New York, I watched for about an hour mm-hmm. and a half the reading of the names from Ground Zero. And there's just no way that you can watch that and not be completely moved to emotion and tears. I got choked up several times, and it was just a sparse. Obviously, they didn't let a general audience onto Ground Zero. It didn't look to me.
No, not at all. It was usually it's family and people from the uniformed services, the police, fire, that sort of thing. But you saw yesterday, I think, indications for a lot of people that while New York certainly has not moved on, the rest of the country probably has. I mean, you're right. The cable networks moved on very quickly to the coverage of Rummy Fest down in D.C. But you also found that precisely at 1 o'clock, all the networks moved to football.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was a point at which everybody moved into their profit mode.
Yeah, God forbid they just, they let these. It's one of those things that, America, I don't think, really should forget. And if there's any link to be made, in terms of 9/11 with anything, it is the pre-9/11 lack of preparation is similar to the pre, Hurricane Katrina lack of preparation in knowing that something was going to happen. You know, whether it was the August 6th PDB saying, look, they're going to fly planes into buildings, or the general knowledge of hurricane season, the state of that city and its hurricane preparedness. And there is something to be said about the federal government in both of these situations that show a complete lack of concern for the American people.
Well, I mean, when you start looking at both September 11th, where George W. Bush responded at first by invading Afghanistan and then by invading Iraq under some very shoddy pretenses, you see that the response to Katrina is relatively similar. And Bush has done something very interesting with Katrina, by the way. He has linked any progress, every drop of water that they drain out of New Orleans, he's taken credit for. It is an amazing thing. And part of what he's trying to do is recapture that moment in time after September 11th when he came down to Ground Zero and posed with all those firemen. That was really an iconic moment in his presidency. And in my judgment, he's been trying to back that up ever since.
Yeah, well, he certainly dropped them. I think that, it took him a few days to get down to the Ground Zero after 9/11. I mean, we can't forget that this is a guy that didn't take action immediately after those planes flew into those buildings. He's a guy that was sitting in a classroom reading a story to a bunch of kids that he did not shift. He did not say, hey, kids, I got president work to do. Mm-hmm. He sat there and finished his story. He flew around. He did not land in Washington immediately. I mean, it took him a while to step up to the plate in whatever way that he did, and I thought even that was ineffectual. But the bottom line is the people of the world were behind us on that day, in the following days, that it did bring everyone together in concern and compassion and in anger. And, over the last 5 years, he's completely, shattered any of that international unity in terms of compassion. Even in Louisiana, I think another thing we see, Riley, and I know you can back me up on this, is that using 9/11 to get to Iraq to line the pockets of Bush cronies, it seems to be exactly what's happening down there in New Orleans. Is now, we're seeing that a lot of contracts are going to Bush cronies in terms of rebuilding the city. We'll get into that in a little while. But one thing that I thought was was interesting about going from the 9/11 memorial service to you know, footage of Katrina victims is that, you know, you really don't get the feeling that America is safer, and certainly polls are showing that.
No, the polls are definitely showing that Americans, and in particular New Yorkers, just don't see initiatives in place, whether it be at the local level or on the national level, that would speak directly to a potential terrorist threat. And we've been getting a lot of them lately. I mean, that kid from, where is he from?
He's from Orange County.
Orange County, California, who wraps a turban around his face and says death to America.
Yeah.
And specifically talks about Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know, now, you know, how does the city of Los Angeles respond? How does the federal government respond? What we see and what we have seen time and time again with this administration is incompetence, either in responding to situations before they happen or in responding to situations after they happen.
Yeah, and the heinous thing to me, I know I've been using that word heinous a lot lately, is that it always seems that people related, that companies, corporations, that profiteering of individuals and companies related to this administration always make an incredible amount of money in relation to any national tragedy. It seems that what's going on in New Orleans, which we'll get into and we'll discuss in detail, the companies that are profiteering who will be making a lot of money because of the attempted privatization of FEMA, which is, in my eyes, is why the ball was dropped down there. And now the guy who used to head FEMA, this guy Joe Albaugh, is now a lobbyist for business concerns. And, of course, his guys are going to be the guys that are going to be making a lot of money. On some level, I think that some Republicans, and we talked about this last week, are saying this is great. You know, this is how they see the way you get you create new jobs and get the economy flowing is by allowing disasters to happen.
Well, one Republican from Louisiana said, well, we've been trying to get rid of the projects in New Orleans, and now it's God did it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, this is the kind of insanity that is coming out of the mouths of a lot of people who really, really ought to know better. But, you know, folks, as you wake up this morning, you ought to ask yourself one very simple question. When you start talking about people's ability to lead, what are you looking for? In the case of Katrina, you would think someone would say, this is my master plan for rebuilding this city. And certainly you could expect maybe Ray Nagin to say that. You could expect Blanco to say that, the governor. But who's the one person in a disaster of this magnitude who you would expect to say it? George W. Bush. Have we heard it? Hell no.
Yeah, and that guy that you said, I want to make sure if people say really stupid, evil things that we get their name out there.
Oh, yeah.
Is Representative Richard Baker. He's a Republican from Louisiana, said, quote, we finally cleaned up public housing in New Orleans. We couldn't do it, but God did, end quote. And he said that not thinking that anyone was listening, because that's what they say behind closed doors, these guys. In a second, we are going to get into a little more about, you know, what is happening in terms of the environment, what is happening in terms of covering up information that is important to Americans in light of disasters, because there's still issues revolving around the health of people that were working at Ground Zero on 9/11, and there are now issues in terms of how safe is New Orleans going to be, you know, when is it going to be okay to even just live in that city because of the toxic waste that is being left as a residue on the city as the water sort of recedes, and also, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, many Americans were asked, there's a new poll out about how safe they do feel and, you know, how confident do they feel in this president now. And I'll tell you, his approval ratings couldn't be lower, and he deserves it. He deserves it. This guy has screwed a lot of things up, and he's allowed a lot of things to happen that have really destroyed the cultural and the political fabric of this country. He's ruined our reputation globally. I'm embarrassed to be an American sometimes, given the actions of the ruling party in this country at this point in time, and he's completely lacks contrition, but I do believe that he believes that what he's doing is facilitating a real landfall for you know, for businesses that are aligned with Republicans, and we're going to get into that in a second. It's a heavy Monday morning, but I hope you're having a good day, and I hope you had a good weekend. It's 15 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your vlog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Thank you.
20 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. And, man, what a big thank you to those of you who came out to the new school on Friday. What a great time that was.
That was a lot of fun, man, and a big audience,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, Stephen Colbert was great. Bob Carey was great. Sarah Jones was great. The people that played in our games, they were great. The audience, it was just a good time. And if you want to be part of that fun, we'll be broadcasting live from Elmo Restaurant this Friday morning. Elmo's on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. We'll be there this Friday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. That should be a good time. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, in terms of the anniversary of 9/11, I read this great story about these firefighters. There are 350 New York City firefighters are down in New Orleans helping out. And, you know, there's a couple of guys, one firefighter who was, there was a couple guys who were actually involved in 9/11. And one guy was actually in the North Tower when it started to collapse. And these guys are, you know, the camaraderie between firefighters is amazing. And there's another firefighter from New York who's down there who wears a silver bracelet on his right arm that has the names of six colleagues from his unit that were lost on 9/11 engraved right on. And apparently a woman from New Orleans had made it for him. And apparently he is also a part of the department that was sent. New Orleans sent them a fire engine, apparently.
Yes.
And then they used it and they thanked them for it. And now they sent it back to New Orleans. Yeah, as a
to help with to help with Katrina.
Yeah,
it's an extraordinary thing. You know, New York City firefighters, and there have been issues with the city fire force in terms of its racial composition, but certainly on September 11th, and I know two guys, one lieutenant, one sergeant, who died. Actually, the picture of one of their rigs was on the front page of the Daily News on the day after September 11th, going over the Brooklyn Bridge, and they went in, and none of them came out. But these guys have an extraordinary level of commitment. When everybody else in New York City on September 11th was running away from the Twin Towers, it was the firemen that went toward it.
Yeah, I knew a cat that was part of one of these special forces type of firefighters. And this is a guy that had been in Vietnam, that had processed a lot of guilt and worked through a lot of shame in his life, and really believed that, you know, what he was doing as a firefighter for the New York Fire Department was the thing that was saving him. You know, in terms of, you know, he was a really solid cat, and he was one of those guys. When I heard that he was lost in 9/11, that, you know, I knew that he was doing exactly what he thought he was supposed to do. That, you know, this was his God-given purpose.
Oh yeah, and see, the thing that a lot of people across the country may not understand about the FDNY is that these guys live together. Unlike other uniformed services, mm-hmm. these guys live together in that firehouse for specific periods of time every week. That's mm-hmm. how they schedule them. And as a result, they have a bond that I think a lot of people feel is much tighter because, you know, they're all making food for each other. They're going to the supermarket together.
Oh, yeah. I see them down at the International Meat Market in Astoria. Like, every once in a while, just the truck will pull up and the guys will get off.
Yeah,
like,
and start piling stuff.
20 pounds of sausage, 15 steaks, you know, and they go back and cook. I'll tell you, though, we got some reports from some of these cats who are in the New York City Fire Department who are down there in New Orleans. They're saying, you know, as bad as 9/11 was, this is an entire city that has been leveled. And a lot of them are reporting that the toxic soup that has become, you know, the streets of Los Angeles, literally. New Orleans. I hope that wasn't any sort of weird prophetic moment. But I hope I wasn't channeling something, you know. All right, look, put that aside. In New Orleans is that one of these guys, a New York City firefighter, reported that he saw a dog take a drink of water from those streets of New Orleans, and 2 hours later, this dog was dead.
Yeah.
Now, this is important to note that after 9/11. All right. After 9/11, the EPA said that the White House instructed that agency to give the public misleading information about the air quality following the attacks. They said it was okay to breathe the air when reliable information on air quality was not available. The National Security Department in the White House took the report from the EPA on September 12th and deleted or changed its recommendations.
Now, the EPA at that time was headed by Christine Todd Whitman, who was the former governor of New Jersey. That her protests, in fact, to some of these deletions and changes started the chain of events that led to her resigning from the EPA, number one. And number two, and people need to understand, this is one of the most maddening things about September 11th. They were encouraging people as early as 24 to 48 hours after the towers fell to go back down into that area, knowing, and I mean, and let me emphasize again, knowing that the air was not safe. They knew,
and
they still told people, go ahead.
The asbestos levels were way above what they were supposed to be, obviously. The toxic dust that was left in apartments and all over the place was, you know, the EPA said, you got to have professionals clean this up. This stuff is dangerous. They took that out of the report. They didn't leave in the report that people with asthma, people with, recurring respiratory ailments were in a great deal of danger, the elderly in danger. They took that out of the report. This is what the government does, and they push Whitman out as opposed to let the public know the truth. And right now, a report from the Government Accountability Office says a federal worker screening program established by the Health and Human Services Department to monitor the health of federal employees at Ground Zero has only conducted like 400 investigations.
Yeah.
Out of thousands, it's completely ineffectual. This government does not care about people. They will choose moving on over the truth at any cost. And how do you feel about that? If you're in New York or anywhere else in the country, you know, have we moved on from 9/11? Is that appropriate? 866-303-2270 is our number. We'll take your calls in just a minute. If you want to reflect about 9/11 and about what's happening in the world in relation to it, about the sort of comparison of the way that this government responded to Katrina and that with 9/11. Anything you want to talk to revolving around this, it would be nice because I'd like to hear from you, certainly. And the polls, you know, American is definitely talking. 8 in 10 Americans think the threat from terrorism is about the same or has grown worse than it was at the time of the attacks of 9/11. Now, that's profound because that means that despite this administration's attempt at all costs to hide the truth is starting to filter into the heads of Americans.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I'm going to tell you something. There are people in New York who believe that America has not just moved on, that America really had no great love for New York before September 11th. There was a brief period in the immediate aftermath of the attacks where people had some empathy with the city, but that dissipated probably something on the order of a couple years ago.
I completely believe that Rumsfeld's little party down there in Washington last weekend to realign 9/11 with Iraq
with
and
Iraq,
create
yeah.
this jingoistic march to sort of appropriate the cultural language of the civil rights movement and create this event down there as a propaganda event, to me, directly reveals that. I think that is a snub in the face of New York. 866-303-2270 is our number if you want to reflect a bit on 9/11 or your opinions about what we're talking about. There is also a current cover-up happening involving the EPA's information around Katrina and just how toxic that city is. We'll get into that. It's 27 past the hour. It's Monday. You're listening to Morning Sedition. That's it.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
The Morning Sedition Old Time Radio Players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, Morning Sedition Radio Theater presents The Roast of Mark Maron.
All right, bring it on. I can take it. Roast away.
Mark, I have some bad news. We couldn't get any comedians to show up and roast you, so,
What? Were you kidding me? No one?
None of them wanted to get up this early. But hey, don't worry. We're just going to use some leftover jokes from the Pamela Anderson roast on Comedy Central.
What?
It'll be fine. Don't worry.
But wait,
I'm not going to stand here and say Mark Maron is just a dumb blonde with big boobs. He also has one of the best butts in the business.
That doesn't even make any sense.
We've all seen Mark's video. He said it was the most humiliating, embarrassing thing he ever did. I'm not talking about the one he made with Tommy Lee. I'm talking about barbed wire.
Riley, this is stupid. Come on.
What's the difference between Mark Maron and MTV? More musicians have been on Mark Maron.
All right, that's it. I'm out of here.
Hey, don't you want a rebuttal?
Oh, boy, they sure got his number. This has been the roast of Mark Maron on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
35 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. We are talking about 9/11. We are talking about 9/11 in relation to people putting it behind them. We are talking about 9/11 in relation to health issues and some similar sort of bungling that's going on in the aftermath of Katrina in terms of what is being told the public about the safety of the area and how long it's going to be before that it's going to be okay. okay. I mean, in just a second, we'll tell you about an EPA official, a 35-year veteran official, a guy named Hugh Kaufman, who apparently does not care about his job anymore.
He sure doesn't.
Because, you know, he's putting out some information about New Orleans, about the nature of the water, but not just in terms of drinking it, but just in terms of the residue and the toxic environment that is going to be left, he says, could be unlivable in some respects for up to 10 years. We're going to talk about that in just a second. I also want to reiterate that, as I was saying before, that in a report from the Government Accountability Office, a federal worker screening program established by the Health and Human Services Department to monitor the health of federal employees at Ground Zero has done nothing. Has conducted about 400 exams. There were thousands of workers. So it's essentially done nothing. It's some government we have here. The GAO findings were to be presented on Saturday at a congressional hearing in New York, but it was postponed. The agency will release the findings on Monday. But you just don't count on any help after the hurricane either. I'll tell you, I mean, this is an administration that wanted to take $125 million back from New York. Back.
Yeah.
You know, which was put aside. The reason it was put there was because we don't know what the hell is going to happen to some of these people that were working down there, let alone, you know, the thousands of people that live down there, let alone, you know, people in all over this city. I mean, I remember that air was toxic, Riley.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's take a call from David in Maine. How are you, David? You there? No? All right. Yeah, it's just, Dave, are you there, David?
Yeah.
Hey, how are
David.
You, man?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I just wanted to talk about that 9/11 thing. I have a brief story, and it's relevant to what you guys were talking about.
Okay.
My friend, who is a real estate appraiser, I won't say her name, but she was a real estate appraiser, and she went down to be a volunteer firefighter.
Okay.
She was firefighting, and she was fighting with the boys. I mean, she had to shower with them and everything. And she realized that they didn't give her any masks or anything. When she came back a year later, she had full-blown cancer.
Oh, my God. That's horrible, man. And,
wow.
And the bottom line is that the government didn't put aside or any money or prepare civilian workers down there for any of this.
The doctors had no idea how she got it. She dealt with it. I mean, it was like something from.
And the administration lied to the people. It was, bottom line, a cover up in terms of, you know, what the safety situation was down there. I'm sorry to hear that, man.
Yeah, that's all right, man.
Okay, take it
all
easy,
right,
David.
Thanks
a lot. So, you know, I mean, this is essentially where the issue lies, is that, you know, apparently, you know, some of these federal workers will be compensated if the money is there, but for civilians and volunteers who were told that it was okay to breathe down there or to work without a mask?
Well, see, and you're going to see the same kinds of things going on in New Orleans. Again, you've got volunteers, by the way, many of them with a great deal of expertise coming from all over the country. Some of them can't even get into New Orleans, but many of those who do are going to end up having the same health issues as people did after Ground Zero, and they, you know, hopefully they'll get a better response from their government. This government has let an awful lot of people who were trying to do the right thing down.
Let's talk about Hugh Kaufman, because I think he might be my new folk hero. Hugh Kaufman is a 35-year veteran official at the Environmental Protection Agency, and he has basically said, this was from an interview he gave with a paper in London, that floodwaters in New Orleans will make the city unsafe for a decade. This is a senior policy analyst at the Office of Hazardous Waste and Emergency Response. Some of the things he said were, the way the water is being pumped out was increasing the danger to health. There were inept, this is his quote, inept political hacks, unquote, running the cleanup, and they will imperil the migrant workers that are enlisting to do the work. The pollution is far worse than is being admitted because his own agency isn't taking enough samples or making public the results of the tests.
The amazing thing, among the amazing things that Hugh Kaufman says in this interview is, number one, the EPA has no one at the table when the Bush administration is trying to tackle how to deal with all this.
See, these guys don't care. All they care about is, like, who can we pay to clean up? Which one of our guys, which one of our cronies, which one of our companies do we have on the, you know, on the Rolodex that we can shovel a bunch of government money, a bunch of taxpayer money in their pockets for cleaning up while we cover up what the truth is about how this is going to affect people when they come back to New Orleans. And this isn't just about drinking water, as I said before. The area around the Port of New Orleans is referred to as Cancer Alley because there are 66 chemical plants, refineries, and petroleum storage depots that spew out 600 million pounds of toxic waste a year. I mean, there are toxic substances in storage tanks down there that may be damaged and leaking into the water, into the in the aftermath of Katrina that we don't even know about. I mean, this is not about just drinking water. This is about what's going to be left as residue on the streets of New Orleans and in the air of New Orleans and in the groundwater of New Orleans. You know, it's just, and the fact that this administration has shut the EPA out, let alone FEMA, you know, taking away that cabinet position and push that off under the Department of Homeland Security and enabled them to try to privatize. To privatize emergency management in this country. And people are making money. We're going to get into that.
Oh, yeah. And see, folks, you need to really be clear about one thing. You know, Bush, after he relieved Michael Brown, I believe that was on Friday, after we got off the air, after he relieved Michael Brown of his responsibilities with regard to the cleanup, leading the cleanup for FEMA, subsequent to that point, they say, well, you know, we're bringing in this hard-charging guy, we're bringing in this can-do guy, and he's going to fix things. What people ought to ask themselves is, why didn't they have a can-do guy in there from the very beginning? Why did they have Michael Brown in that job and not the guy they brought in to replace him if mm-hmm. he's got the expertise? Because it's obvious Michael Brown was in over his head before the first drop of rain fell on New Orleans.
Yeah, yeah. It's not only over his head, but the guy that got him the gig, that guy Albar,
yeah.
I mean, this guy has been a Bush crony since, you know, forever. And this guy is now not only facilitating Michael Brown getting a job just because they were roommates, but facilitating Halliburton subsidiary Kellogg Brown Root to get a big, big multi-million dollar contract, and another one of his clients is getting a contract to do some reconstruction there. It just never ends. You know, the government is no longer able to do what it was supposed to do to protect the people of this country in terms of terrorism, in terms of natural disaster. It has been disabled by this administration to do those tasks, and they are subcontracting to companies that can only, you know, clean up afterwards and take all the money that they're, you know, that used to be part of the government in order to take care of the people of this country, and now it's just being shoveled in to the pockets of these crony companies that are cleaning up these messes or profiteering off these messes while million, you know, why hundreds of people die, thousands of people die around the world.
It creeps you out. Well, it creeps you out.
It creeps me out because, like, I'm waking up to something. I knew it was bad, but when I really see just how, you know, government money, how our money from our taxpayer money is just shoveled into the pockets of these people that don't care about the human cost of this stuff.
Well, you see, what people have to understand about politics is that when you run a presidential campaign, you literally have dozens of people who have worked on that campaign and contributed to your success, but don't want necessarily to work directly in government jobs right off the top. So what you do is you find places for them in different areas. And in some cases, they do want government jobs, as is the case with Albar, as was the case with Brown. Albar was a campaign manager for George W. Bush. Now, he needed a gig after that ended. This is back in 2000. So what do? They give him FEMA. And believe me, half of those people that are working in FEMA are hacks.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk to Catherine here in Sacramento, because I think she might have something to say along these lines. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank God for both of you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have a dear friend whose daughter was killed on 9/11. She was working at Windows on the World,
mm-hmm.
Laura Rockefeller, and her sister is being very active in Families for Peaceful Tomorrows.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of work on air quality in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly you know that Christine Whitman resigned from the EPA saying that it's her party too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, it's been brought out just recently that George W. Bush said about 9/11 that it was an opportunity.
Yes.
An opportunity, my God.
It's horrendous. And he said the same thing in not so many words about Katrina as well by, you know, immediately saying, well, just imagine what a great city it's going to look like when we get finished.
Yeah, you know, like Nero did.
Exactly. You're absolutely right, Catherine. I appreciate your call.
Thank you very much for calling. So what do we do?
Yeah, he fiddled while Rome
burned.
He played guitar with that country music musician. I don't even know the guy's name. I feel bad. I should know his name.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But he is like Nero because it's not narrow-mindedness. What it is that he just looks ahead, you know, despite the fact that there is such a tremendous human cost. He just constantly is saying, well, man, it's going to be great when my friends rebuild this place and I make them a lot of money. Who cares if we lie to the people? People are disposable to this administration.
Yeah, and Rove told him, don't look back, look forward.
Well, look, in a minute we're going to talk about some terrorist numbers. There's been a recent terrorist announcement. A tape came out of Al-Qaeda that was presented by an American.
Yeah.
He's the new face of Al-Qaeda is an American from Orange County. And we actually were able to get a copy of a planning tape. I don't know how the hell we got that. But we also have Future Mark is probably going to call as well. So stay with us. We got a little funny. If we're going to break things up with a little funny. Is that all right? 46 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Attention, mis hermanos and mis hermanas. This is Pendejo. Viva la revolucion! You're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 50 past the hour. It's Monday morning. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'll tell you, you know, this guy, Adam Gadan of Orange County, is the new face of Al-Qaeda. He's an American. And he released a tape. They released a tape, which I found to be disturbing but interesting in the sense that basically there's a quote on the tape. The tape basically called the White House liars, threatened Los Angeles and Melbourne, Australia, celebrated the bombings of Madrid and London, and he said, quote, "They have dispatched your sons and daughters to die lonely deaths in the burning desert of Iraq and the unforgiving mountains of Afghanistan," end quote. I just thought it was interesting that he said sons and daughters, not just sons, because it's almost like it was balanced out. And oddly, someone sent us a tape of the planning section session of this particular this terrorist threat tape. Yeah, I don't know where, you know, the fringe. You know, we get dispatches from the fringe. What's the matter, Chris? What's going on?
Sorry to bother you, man. Yeah. But Future Mark's on line one.
Oh, great. I love that guy. Put him through.
Hey, buddy, what's up? Well, I'm just heading over to one of my properties.
One of my properties? That sounds good. What are you, like a landlord or something?
Well, it's a lot bigger than that, buddy. I'm going to give you some advice right up front this time. Invest in the underground.
What do you mean? Like independent films, music, stuff like that?
No, man. I mean literally invest underground. Like under the ground, dude, below the Earth's surface. Get me?
I'm going to need a little more here.
It shouldn't be a big surprise that all the oil fields dried up and it left these huge empty spaces underground. And with all the pollution above ground, it was only natural that everything would start moving down here. You get it? I got in early. It was dirt cheap.
Yeah? So you're underground right now?
Yeah. I'm heading to the mansion on my subterranean mushroom plantation.
You're a mushroom farmer?
Yes, among other things.
Hey, dude, what's that noise?
It's my Digmaster Sport Cruiser. It's a tunneler. Hyundai makes it. Runs on darkness. Hey, it's kind of a whole twist on the solar thing.
Okay, wait. So you invested in these caverns and you farm mushrooms?
Oh, yeah, and I have storage facilities. People park their boats and trailers down here. Without the whole sun thing, I've made a lot of money. On tanning centers, nail salons, frozen yogurt places. I make every donut in the world. I own a chain of $99 stores, you know, where everything's $99.
Wait a minute. Back up. I sort of get the other ones, but did you say you make every donut in the world?
Yeah.
Well, what if someone tries to make a donut?
They don't, all right? They just don't.
That's why I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around this donut thing.
Let it go, Mark. It's just a fact, okay? It just is.
Well, wait. What about other things from the donut family, like cinnamon buns? Do you make those?
Look, Mark, drop it. It's just a fact. I make every donut in the world.
But why do they have to be made underground?
Dude, you ask me one more donut question, I'm hanging up.
Whoa, what happened?
I just hit a giant earthworm, you bastard! Of course, I just washed my digger this morning. Crap.
Giant earthworms?
Yeah, pesky bastards. They try to eat my moles.
What the hell is that?
Those are my moles, Mark. It's sort of a rich man's hobby. For a few years now, I've been breeding singing moles.
Dude, this is getting really weird.
They're good, though, aren't they? Bravo, that was fantastic. Very good. Encore.
You go a little crazy underground, I guess.
Just because I love my singing moles, I'm crazy?
Yeah, you just said the words, just because I love my singing moles, I'm crazy. Dude, get some rest, okay?
Yeah, sure, okay. Hit it, boys!
Oh, man. Wow, I'm a little concerned about Future Mark. I don't singing moles.
Singing moles.
Well, let's get right into this because I think it's important news. This Adam Gadan of Orange County, the new face of
Al
Qaeda.
That's Orange County, California now. Because yes. There is an Orange County in New York.
No, it's Orange County, California. And he was a guy on this Al Qaeda tape that said that they were going to bomb Los Angeles or then maybe Melbourne, Australia. And he also said that they have, quote, dispatched your sons and daughters to die lonely deaths in the burning desert of Iraq and the unforgiving mountains of Afghanistan, end quote. And I thought it was interesting when I read it that he brought in the daughters. But we actually got this tape of them planning this dispatch. And can we play that? Wait, guys, just chill out a second. Let's reassess this. Let's not go to press on this yet. I think it would be really cool if we, put in the girls, the women, because there's a lot of women who are now fighting, with the American forces. So I think we should say sons and daughters, die a lonely death in desert. Is that cool?
No,
wait. Hassan, and Ahmed, I want you four guys to hear me out on this. We want to reach out in a way that most terrifies, my people. And I think that the way we do it is include the daughters, because there are daughters there, okay? I mean, it's not the same in America as it is here. Fellas, I mean, really, I think you should really listen to me on this one. All right, so that's a done deal. You got to trust me on this. It's really going to be a lot more effective, right? Cool. Yeah, I hope that CNN picks up on that.
I think that was the turtle from Finding Nemo.
Oh, boy. I don't know what's going on. But, it's profound when you hear, how these things really happen. That these guys are, actually having a decision-making process, these evil bastards.
Well, this is an amazing story anyway. Here's a kid who was, listening to metal music a couple of years ago. Goes to a mosque, apparently, in Orange County, converts to Islam, and now he's the American face of Al-Qaeda?
I can't believe that, he's gotten that high up in the structure of Al-Qaeda. But, I mean, how many Americans could they possibly have? That's the big question. This is also one of those interesting things that kind of goes against the they're all Arab thing.
Yeah, the all Arab frame doesn't apparently work in this guy's case.
This is an argument against the racial profiling element of law enforcement.
Well, yeah, because he could probably put on a suit and get through any airport in the country.
I've had a lot of arguments over the weekend. The Republicans are losing some steam. Conservatives in their talking points are losing some steam because they don't have the confidence they used to. And I got to tell you, it's a great thing.
Well, yeah, and here's hoping their confidence erodes with each passing minute.
Yes, we're going to talk. We know what we're going to do. We're going to do the iNews because I kind of got away from me a few minutes ago. We'll do that over the top of the hour. I have a feeling we might be getting a call from my stalker. I just have a feeling. 57 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah. 6 past the hour. Good morning. It's Monday. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Hey, thanks again to all you cats that came down to the new school to our live performance, Cats and Kitties, as Lord Buckley would say. We had a great time. We had a lot of fun. Good, funny show. It was great to be on a stage.
It was really enjoyable.
The folks at the new school were just great. Can I say one? I don't know if anyone knows the answer to this question in this room because I didn't do the research I need to. Belly dancing. Do you know you've seen belly dancing, right? Belly dancing.
Yeah, sure.
Now, is that what is the point of belly dancing?
Exercise?
No. Well, that's it. It's supposed to be
for the man or the woman.
No, for the man. Okay, yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, it's a seductive dance. Am I wrong? All right. Well, so now apparently, as you just said, Riley, it's exercise. I'm at the gym. I'm on the treadmill. There's a belly dancing class going on in the studio right in front of me.
That's not right.
I know. There are 30 women in there learning how to belly dance. It was adorable and inspirational and wrong.
My wife went to one of those things.
Yeah, but I'm standing there on the treadmill. How the hell am I supposed to exercise? You know, what am I supposed
to
do?
Turn the treadmill in the other direction.
Oh, my God. Dude, it was ridiculous. I didn't want to stare, but that's what it's for. It wasn't supposed to be exercise. And I don't want to, you know, be rude. I want to be leering. So I was, but it was almost impossible.
Why don't you want to leer?
Because, you know, you don't want to get caught. You know why? I'll be honest with you, Riley. Because I didn't want to make them uncomfortable.
Yeah,
I didn't make the women uncomfortable because they're having a nice time and they're doing exercise and wearing a belly dance, you know, and it wasn't necessarily for me. That's one thing that men have to realize is that it's not all there for you.
But you could have applauded. You could have, you know,
You could have opened the door and said, you know what, ladies, you guys are doing a great job.
Right, yeah.
Wait, yeah, then just stood there without my pants on. Hey, I was on the treadmill and I couldn't help myself. Yeah. I just want to tell you, I'm coming every week at this time.
Yeah. You ladies are marvelous.
Yes, they took me away in handcuffs. No, you won't be coming to this gym anymore. Thank you for. So let's do the iNews. You want to?
Yeah.
All right. You know, sometimes when it's hard to figure out what the headlines are saying. It can be tough to figure out just exactly what the media is saying. Thank God we have this machine, the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up. All right, here we go from CNN. Poll: Bush approval at 39%. We're going to talk a little bit about that too. Yeah. By the way, poll: Bush approval at 39%. Bush approval at 39%. Translation: Bush's popularity now below chlamydia, genital warts. All right, from the Associated Press: Firms with ties to Bush snag Katrina deals. Firms with ties to Bush snag Katrina deals. Translation: Vultures smack lips, circle New Orleans. All right. From Associated Press, we're going to get into that too later, my friends, about these companies. I'm telling you, it almost makes it seem like these guys were negligent and it was planned so they could make money. From Associated Press: Rescued dogs airlifted from Gulf Coast. Rescued dogs airlifted from Gulf Coast. Translation: Rescued dogs fly with heads hanging out of plane windows. And I chuckled at that one because I thought it was cute.
Hey, Maren.
Yeah.
Sorry to bother you, but threatening guy, the stalker, he's on line one.
Really? For me? Hey, oh, that's nice. Hey, man, what's up?
Why am I talking to you? I asked for Mark Riley. I don't stalk you anymore, Mark Maron. We're through.
No, you asked for Mark Maron. I'm sure of it.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I did not say Mark Maron.
Yes, you did, and I can play it back for you.
let's talk to someone else. Can we talk to, it looks like Brian's calling from Everett, Washington. Brian, good morning, Brian. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Hey, Brian.
I am in the Maronite vortex, man. I got your book, finally.
You got Jerusalem Center. That's hard to find now.
Did you think I had your book and was using it as a reference to harass you in the past?
Dude, I did, man.
You want to talk about weirdness, man?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't have $12.95 to go buy a book.
Okay.
So I supplicate to my library system because they didn't have it, and so they borrowed it from another library system.
Wow. So you
in
really...
In California.
Okay.
Uh-oh. Orange County.
Oh, my God.
The OC?
Yeah, so you're saying that maybe my book could have... triggered that guy Adam Kadan or something?
I don't know. It's only rock and roll, man. That's all I got to say, man.
Heavy metal.
Hey, I'm working on a song a review. Oh, by the way, I found a real error on the back page in the reviews
of the book.
Well, it says Mark Maron is the first crazy person I've ever envied. Janine Garofalo, comedian.
Uh huh.
I didn't know Janine Garofalo was a comedian.
All right, now.
But I'm writing a song as a review for the book.
Though. Yeah.
It's called The Hot Dogs of Freedom.
Uh-oh.
Now I'm just happy about the button. Hey, so you're working on a song. We're going to hear it later. Hey, can you do me a favor, Brian? Could you play it for us first before you schlep it out to one of those stinky stations in Seattle, you two-timing whore?
I was with them first.
I don't...
Listen, if I hadn't have been hated by them so much, I wouldn't have been loved by you so much.
Well, I love you, man. And when are you going to call with the song? When can we expect it? Because I get excited about these things.
Well, first I'd like to say it's good to see you're on at a decent hour. I can't wait all day for you guys to come on.
What happened now? When are we on out there? We're only on now, right?
I'm going to have to start getting up at 2 to hear Rachel Maddow now.
So wait, we're not on in the morning.
You're on now.
Right.
You're on now.
And live in real time.
So what happens at 6?
Stephanie Miller.
Oh, my God. I'm not even going to get into it, man.
It's cool, man. Hey, I'm all, everything's cool.
It's cool,
man.
Brian, how is that Stephanie Miller show?
Oh, I enjoy it. I only
All right, hang up on him. I'm done with it.
Cut off his mic.
All right. You know, it's like Everyone thinks we're all friends, you know, but I'm not going to get in any trouble. I wish everybody the best success. Look, I want to talk a little bit more. I can't believe I just hung up. Brian, I'm sorry, buddy. Call us back with the song.
Please.
Had a moment of infantile regressive anger there. Let's talk about these poll numbers, Riley, because, you know, from the Schadenfreude point of view, from the liberal Schadenfreude point of view, these are very encouraging.
Yes.
Bush's overall job approval at a record low of 38%. 38%, Riley.
Mm-hmm.
Is that unbelievable?
You know what's unbelievable?
What?
For me, is that for the first time, Bush's strength, his polling on the war on terror has gone below 50%.
38%? This guy's got almost no approval rating.
Yep.
I don't even know who the hell likes him. The people that do like him still have got to be complete morons or in complete denial or just completely out of touch with anything that's going on in the world or rich.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, these are polls that are snapshots of the American people's mood. And what you see, I think, is Katrina taking a serious toll on what little approval he had to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, you're really talking now about the mid-40s before all this stuff started. And when you start talking about Katrina perhaps even having an impact, again, all through the campaign last year, Bush's approval rating on Iraq, not on Iraq, on the war on terror, was historically above 50%. You remember when you went off one time in here about the fact that Americans still were behind him in the war on terror?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know how they could be. I'll tell you, this is the one thing that really resonated with me after the response of Katrina, is that even me secretly assumed that maybe they were doing something. Maybe they were, you know, breaking up terror cells. Maybe they were actually, you know, engaging in law enforcement that would protect us from another terrorist attack. But after Katrina, I just think all these guys care about is cutting and running in terms of economic prosperity for themselves and the people that they are aligned with.
Yeah, all of whom are already rich, by the way. But see, one of the things that Bush does very in a very cunning fashion,
mm-hmm.
is to try and talk. Now, and you watch how the conservatives end up trying to frame this thing. They're going to say that the more you criticize Bush, the less you really care about the people in New Orleans. Because with each bit of good news, you look at the headlines in the papers here. It says Bush visits New Orleans amid some gains.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean? You're associating Bush with gains, with something getting better in New Orleans. And what's going to happen is people are going to start turning on folks who continue to harp on what happened in the first place.
Yeah, these people, because they're going to start spinning stuff.
They're
but the bottom line
stuff,
is, if anyone has a real memory and hasn't been hypnotized, you know, this is the way talking points work. It is a tactic of hypnosis. Once people are in a state, a mild state, a post-hypnotic state, it just takes a series of suggestions over and over again to get them to believe something. So if some people are in the process of getting their minds back, I urge them to make sure they keep their memory engaged. And some of the stuff we're going to talk about in just a few minutes will help them keep their memory engaged, because we're going to talk about, you know, which friends are getting contracts to rebuild New Orleans. Which friends, because some of them are the same
some
as Iraq.
Some are the same as Iraq.
You know,
true.
Which Bush cronies are actually, and how it's being facilitated by the ex-FEMA ahead, the guy who got Michael Brown his job. It's just trashy, stinky stuff. 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey!
Wow, the Pixies. I just had a moment this morning where I was like, man, the Pixies were a great, great band.
I second that. Pixies were great, but Stalker guy is not back on the line,
uh-huh.
And I asked twice, and he definitely wants to talk to Mark Maron.
All right. Hey, man, what can I do for you, buddy?
I don't know, Mark. I just. Just
say it, man.
I just miss you. I miss stalking you.
But Dude, you stalk Mark Riley now. You said it. We're over. Let me hand you over to Riley.
No, Mark, wait.
What? What is it?
Can we work things out? I mean, we had something really special. I loved threatening you, stalking you. Oh, God, Mark, I miss you so much. I just want to stalk you right now. I want to stalk you so hard.
Whoa. Wait, stop it, stop it. Wait, first, weird, uncomfortable. All right, first, what's Riley supposed to think, all right? You're his stalker now.
Oh, Mark, I can't stalk Mark Riley. It just doesn't work. He calls me all the time. Asks if I want to do stuff. He's too cheery. I say I'm going to make your life a living hell, and Mark Riley asks if I've ever had waffles with peanut butter and jelly. We just don't connect in a stalker-victim way. Not like us, Mark. We were so good together.
Are you saying you want me back?
Are you saying you'd take me?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm going to have to, I got to think about it. Yeah, I've kind of moved on. I mean, there's this other guy and,
what?
You know,
you already have another stalker?
No. I've just seen him, you know, staring at me from across the subway platform. You know, it's on the corner near my house. Or, you know, there have been some hang-ups on my phone. And
so you haven't had any contact with him yet?
No, not really, but I think it's he's going to stalk me full on soon.
Please, Mark, I'm so depressed. I can't even bring myself to look at your surveillance photos anymore.
Look. I'm going to need some more time to think about this.
Oh, okay, Mark. Mark?
Yeah?
I'll be thinking about killing you.
Wow. I don't know what to say. You've never used those words before.
I want to bring us to the next level, Mark, if you'll take me back.
All right, look, just give me a couple of days, okay?
Oh, Mark, you'll make me the happiest stalker in the world. Please.
I got to go. I gotta go.
Who's stalking who here? I hang up first.
All right, just back off, man. I'm not ready for this yet, all right?
Okay, bye. I'm hanging up now, Mark Maron.
All right, goodbye.
Goodbye. You're going to hear a dial tone.
Oh no! What have I got myself into, man? Oh, Riley, what do you got? What, this guy is ruining,
hey, man,
our lives.
First of all, forget the peanut butter and jelly waffle thing.
Okay,
right? That's
right.
Out of the question.
Catfish and waffles. I had at that place. What's the name of that place again?
Oh, Amy Ruth's. Yeah.
Oh boy,
yeah,
that was good. That was great. That guy's gonna get mad at me now. Mark Maron never remembers the names of black people or
black establishments,
right, Mike? All right, in a few minutes we're gonna be talking to Marion Fontana. She is the widow of a firefighter who lost his wife in 9/11. She's written a book called The Widow's Walk. She's going to be out here in just a second. But I do want to talk a little bit about the administration, you know, and the cronies that they are utilizing in order to rebuild after Katrina. Their contracts have been set. All right. Congress has already appropriated about $60 billion for emergency funding, and the total number that's going to be is going to be over $100 billion, Riley.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where it gets a little stinky. All right. Former Bush campaign manager and FEMA head. This is Joe Albaugh. Mm-hmm. All right. He has turned into a corporate lobbyist, and he is definitely kicking some ass for his clients at the moment. One is Shaw Group Incorporated, and the other is Halliburton subsidiary Kellogg Brown Root. Now, Albaugh signed on as a lobbyist for Halliburton in February, so this deal does not include him. But he's also the guy that got Michael Brown his gig. So let's get into this Shaw Incorporated. Shaw sealed the deal on a $100 million emergency FEMA contract for housing management and construction and a $100 million order from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. All right? Halliburton, Kellogg Brown Root. A continuing source of income for Dick Cheney, picked up a $29.8 million Pentagon contract to begin rebuilding naval bases in Louisiana and Mississippi. This deal was sealed before Albaugh was hired, as I said. But what's happening here is, this is, on some level, exactly what this guy wanted. I mean, this is the privatization of FEMA. So what, you know, whatever happened leading up to the hurricane, whatever happened in the few days afterwards, really doesn't make a difference to these guys, because this is their bread and butter here.
Yeah, it's their bread and butter. And understand that this is part of a career path that predates, you know, Alba's appointment to FEMA and all of that. What these guys do is they work for a politician, they get a government gig, and then they get a gig in the private sector for a whole bunch of money. Because Alba is going to get a commission on each and every one of those contracts that you just mentioned that his clients are a part of.
But this is like part of their scheme. This is a failure on behalf of the administration, obviously, in that this privatizing of government programs or government, you know, especially emergency programs like this, it's a failure to the people on the ground during the emergency. Like, these contracts may have been put in place, but where was the plan to be there when the people needed them?
There's no plan yet. I keep saying over and over again, and it's driving me crazy. You know, at the end of World War II, they had one guy, George Marshall. General George Marshall, he put together a plan for rebuilding Europe. It was called the Marshall Plan.
Right.
Well, where is the Bush plan? Where is the Cheney plan? Where is somebody's plan?
Here's part of the plan right here. Let's not forget, Pentagon audits released by the Democrats in June showed that Halliburton has about $1.03 billion in questioned costs and about $422 million in unsupported costs for their work in Iraq.
Yeah.
These guys are crooks. They're just crooks, Riley, and it's disgusting.
It's just failing upwards.
In a few minutes, Marion Fontana will be here to talk about her book, A Widow's Walk, about the loss of her husband, a firefighter on 9/11. So stick around for that. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Mornings Edition. It's Monday.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Good morning. It's Monday. I know it's hard. Dave Fontana was a New York City firefighter who died in the World Trade Center on 9/11. Dave's wife has written a memoir entitled A Widow's Walk, in which she shares her grief and her fight on behalf of the families of New York's firefighters who lost their lives on 9/11. She joins us today in our studio. Good morning, Marion Fontana. Nice to see you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Sure. I'm glad you came down. I'm glad you woke up and came on down. I tell you, it's a lovely looking book, in all honesty. It seems very personal and very... moving. What did you do yesterday on the anniversary with your son?
Well, we do the same thing on every anniversary. Mm-hmm. We go back to our neighborhood of Park Slope, mm-hmm. and we go to the firehouse, my husband's firehouse, and meet with all the families. Mm. We go to a mass nearby at a nearby church, and then have a reception. And then I take my son alone to the graveyard, and we have kind of more of a contemplative, quiet time together. Mm-hmm.
So you don't get involved with the Ground Zero memorial ceremony or?
No, you know, since, you know, I've been so public and political, yeah. at Ground Zero the whole 4 years, it's a time for me to step back and reflect and make it more private.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there has been a lot of back and forth among not just the firefighters and police victims,
mm-hmm.
But among the Ground Zero victims in general about what should be there. What do you think ought to be there?
Well, I think, you know, the big struggle for us is to really make the memorial the centerpiece of what happens down there. There's so many political interests and special interest groups down there trying to all vie for their own thing. And it's hard because, you know, we had the unfortunate circumstances of having our loved ones die in the most expensive piece of real estate in the city.
Yeah.
So while we understand there needs to be a lot of consideration to that, we really want the memorial to be the focus. And that's been the big struggle. As far as knowing what's down there, I like Michael Arad's design. He's a friend of mine. I think he's very sensitive and compassionate to the families and trying really hard to accommodate all the interest within the families themselves as well.
Yeah.
We've been talking a lot all morning about just, in terms of what happened in after 9/11, in terms of the administration, in terms of the health quality of the air and all this other stuff. And, I'd like to know just from you, what led you to establish the 9/11 Widows and Victims Family Association? Was it a reaction to a feeling of mistreatment by the administration?
Well, it was really actually by accident, truthfully. Uh-huh. I'd love to say that I planned on being political, but they tried to close my husband's firehouse about 2 weeks after the 11th, and since I lived in the neighborhood, I'm in a very political neighborhood in Park Slope, all I had to do was make 2 phone calls, and we organized a rally outside the firehouse, got politicians and media to come, and, you know, kids that I taught for years brought signs, and it was kind of this, you know, grassroots thing. And we were, you know, able to keep the firehouse open. And after that, you know, a flurry of media kind of, you know, grabbed onto me. And I felt like if I was going to do media, I didn't want to just talk about my husband's death. I wanted to, you know, do something for the firefighters. So I started talking about their salaries and researching the long history of their inequitable salaries. And it kind of snowballed from there.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that always kind of troubled me about the rebuilding of Ground Zero was that there was always going to be some kind of housing component. And I always wondered why someone didn't suggest that young firefighters and cops who needed a place to stay with their families, you know, as a first place, would have some kind of subsidized housing in Ground Zero.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, one of the difficult things my husband and I struggled with is you're required to live
in the city of New York.
And it is the most expensive place to live. And so we really struggled, as do all, you know, the city workers. And so I think that's a wonderful idea because, you know, it's a hard thing. Some of the guys commute all the way up from Harriman State Park to come to their firehouses. So
that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, Riley. So let's make some calls after the show. We're going to make that happen.
I'll take a 2-bedroom.
Okay. how are the politicians' response to you in your exchanges with Giuliani, Pataki, Hillary Clinton?
Well, Hillary Clinton is, I think, an amazing politician. She reacted immediately and was very powerful in particularly the health issues with the firefighters. That was one thing that we talked with her a lot about. Mayor Giuliani actually was, and I'm a Democrat, you know, I was really impressed by his reaction. You know, unlike President Bush, who was slow to react, he immediately kind of reassured the citizens that we're going to be okay and we're a strong city. And in terms of the families, you know, he really rolled up his sleeves and was receptive to us coming to the table and making certain issues, bringing them to light.
So, okay.
Yeah.
Now, do you find yourself upset about the politicizing of 9/11 in terms of how it is continuing to be aligned with the Iraq war by this administration?
Absolutely. I've been outraged. In fact, I went down to the White House as a guest of the second anniversary, I guess, to see a film about one of the fathers who had lost 2 sons. And I told Rumsfeld, I said, I'm really outraged that you're using my husband's death as an excuse to go into a country that had nothing to do with 9/11. Mm-hmm. You know, we really needed to keep the spotlight on Afghanistan and really perpetrate the Al-Qaeda there. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think they've used it to promote their agendas very much so.
Oh, they did it last weekend, too. They had a big parade down there, a celebration of some kind.
They gave out the Medal of Honor, you know, as I think on the 9th down there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, your husband was actually off at the time that the towers went down. He wasn't he had just finished a shift, am I right?
That's right. Yeah, it was our 8th wedding anniversary, so we had switched shifts to have that day off. And so he was coming off a 24-hour shift.
And went toward the World Trade Center anyway.
Yeah, as did a few firefighters from his house. There were only 8 men working and 12 were killed, so he wasn't the only one who kind of... If there's a good job, a firefighter wants to go. That's what they call it, a good job. You know.
Well, he sounds like a pretty amazing guy. Now, in the book, what is the sort of the through line of the book? Do you talk about your relationship with your husband for most of the book? And then where does it go? What do people need to know about your husband?
Well, it really follows the day of the 11th, obviously, and then it flashes back through our 17 years ago together. And, you know, it's a very personal story. It's about how he became a father and was an amazing, loving dad. And he was a sculptor. We met in college in the art dorms. And He was a lifeguard, and so it kind of talks about how our love grew. And
I know, I was looking at the pictures in the book. I felt like I was at your house. You know, I was sitting on the couch in your living room going, can I just look at the photo album? And it's really personal and a beautiful book. Now, in terms of, you know, we've been talking a little bit of, today about people in New York not really being as anxious to move on from this as the rest of the country. Like, certainly, like, all the local stations here in New York covered the ceremony at Ground Zero, you know, throughout, you know, the morning, whereas basic cable just kind of did their thing for a few minutes and moved on. On a personal level, you know, what is, how does one move on, and is it is there a way to remember it so it never goes away in terms of what it represents?
Yeah, I think it's a fine line. I mean, for me, I think you have to move on to heal, but that you don't want to forget. So it's how do you weigh that out? To me, I choose to remember the more positive aspects of what happened on after 9/11, the way the city kind of came together in this unprecedented way. I mean, I was so buoyed by the generosity and love that came pouring towards my son and I after 9/11, and I want to remember that. I mean, I think that's what's, you know, forgotten now. Or, you know, I'm seeing it in Louisiana, which gives me, you know, hope. But, you know, trying to remember how people reassess their lives and kind of reprioritize family and what's important. And I'd like to see that remembered more than anything else.
And what's your life like now, these days?
Well, you know, I'm doing this book. It's a pretty intense publicity schedule. But I'm really trying to come back to spending a lot of time with my son and writing. And I really want to do comedy again. That's what I did before.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised I haven't met you.
Yeah. Yeah, I wrote one-woman comedy shows, mostly monologues, and did them off-Broadway for years. And I really miss it. I mean, I just took such a right turn, you know.
Well, there's room for you. Come on down.
Mark, and Marion. That's kind of good.
I think she just asked us for a job.
Hey.
You're hiring?
Now, you still live in Park Slope?
Yep. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I moved about 2 years ago. I'm there a lot. I still have my writing office there and all my friends and support there. But I moved to Staten Island. I felt like we needed a fresh start. I found an amazing old carriage house, and my parents live around the corner and help out. And it's really nice.
That is amazing. Now, you know, in terms of closure, like if let's say if Osama bin Laden was caught, you know, would that make a difference at this point in your life, or is it more important that they rectify some of the things that happened, you know, that become revealed after 9/11, like communications breakdowns, things that put the firefighters not in the best position they could have been? That's, I would think, would be more important.
Absolutely,
right?
Yes, I agree. I mean, if we don't learn from the mistakes that were made, I think we're doomed to repeat it. And I think that's really the mistake of this administration, is they're not taking information. And Louisiana is a perfect example of how they had all that information. And they didn't, you know, prevent that from happening. And so I think it's really important that we take that information and really assess what to do next.
You know, that leads to the question of whether or not people feel that you know, as currently constituted, this government is able to respond to these kinds of things. Do you think it is?
If they can get over, I mean, if they can really listen to the experts. I think the problem is they think they're the experts, and all they're not. I mean, there are people from Louisiana telling him that, you know, this levee can only withstand, you know, a level four, category four, and they didn't listen. So I think they need to open their ears, listen to the American people. There's a lot of, I mean, I think today came out that his approval rating has dropped significantly.
38%.
Yeah. So I think he's, you know, he needs to finally start listening to what people are feeling in this country.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to have a very tremendous sensitivity to people. He looks ahead to where his friends can make money.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, the book is A Widow's Walk. We've been talking to Marion Fontana. It was a pleasure to talk to you. Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Come back and see us sometime.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
you
bet. Great.
45 past the hour. We'll be back in a second to probably say more bad things about the president. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
6:50 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. It's Monday morning. In a few minutes, we're gonna read you a list of quotes and see if you can guess which idiot said them everything revolving around Katrina response. Unbelievable. The amount of Republican retardation surrounding this event. But right now, FEMA Director Michael Brown was removed from an on-scene oversight of hurricane recovery efforts, and he might lose his job altogether. He should. We found this job listing over the weekend, but reading it, I don't think FEMA learned anything from the Michael Brown fiasco. It's our Morning Sedition Monday job listing. Well-connected crony sought for patronage posts. A former well-regarded federal agency seeks a dithering lifelong non-achiever to oversee the continued decline of a formerly well-regarded federal agency. Responsibilities include political loyalty and the ability to cash large paychecks. In the event of an emergency, you will be expected to... What are we talking about this for? There won't be any emergencies. To be considered for this post, it's essential that you have an impressive resume. Actual experience is, of course, beside the point, but an impressive resume is a must. Also, a vague knowledge of the judging protocols at Arabian horse shows is completely pointless, but recommended. Former college roommates of other well-connected cronies are especially encouraged to apply. Good luck. We just know you're going to do a heck of a job. That's sad. Hey, this is some disturbing bit of business. The Doctrine for Nuclear Operations was last updated 10 years ago, is being updated again to reflect the threat of terrorist attacks. Now, this is, I guess, the Doctrine for Nuclear Operations is basically the protocols of, what do we do with nukes?
Yeah, when can we drop the bomb?
Exactly. Now, the document makes clear a few things. It makes clear the decision to employ nuclear weapons at any level requires explicit orders from the president. It says that terrorists or regional states armed with weapons of mass destruction will likely test U.S. security commitments to its allies and friends, right? The U.S. needs a range of capabilities to assure friend or foe alike of its resolve. That's where it gets a little creepy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it does get creepier, Riley. Am I wrong? I mean, about the creepiest thing this thing says is it basically says, it notes that U.S. policy has always been purposely vague with regard to when the United States would use nuclear weapons, and that has never vowed, not to be the first one to use them in a conflict. But one scenario for a possible nuclear preemptive strike in the current draft of the Doctrine for Nuclear Operations would be in the case of an imminent attack from an adversary biological weapons that only effects from nuclear weapons can safely destroy, end quote. Now, that's baffling. So that means that theoretically, if a country was supporting terrorists or a country was about to attack us with biological agents that, I guess could disseminate the entire country, then the only way to respond to that would be to nuke them first. And the only way that would be okay is if nuclear, fire would be the only thing that could kill these biological agents. Is that am I misreading this?
No, you're reading it accurately. And what it is saying in the big picture, and this is the United States, by the way, saying this to the world. We got the nukes. We'll use the nukes.
Right.
We'll use the nukes before somebody nukes us under certain circumstances. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, and they use that differentiation that, because we are dealing with what they are calling the war on terror, which has no necessarily state-specific or nation-specific foundation, that if you are harboring terrorists, and that, that could be a speculation, as we find a lot of times, that you are open to invitation of nuclear weapons from us.
You know who's
loaded
paying,
ones.
Yeah, loaded ones. You know who's paying very close attention to this, by the way?
Iran,
North Korea, Pakistan, India. Why are they paying close attention? Because these are countries that the United States has attempted to say either you must disarm or you cannot start producing nuclear weapons. Now, what this kind of statement and this kind of studying and studying of preemptive nuclear strikes says to them is, wait a minute, the people that are telling us we can't have nukes are fully prepared to use nukes on us if they need to.
Right.
That's what it's saying to these places. And that's not to say that these are the North Koreans are great or whatever, but if you're looking out for your own self-interest, How are you supposed to respond to this?
Well, I'll tell you how Iran is, or the Iranians are responding. The new foreign minister of Iran said they were building two nuclear power plants, right? Despite any warning, we're going to build them. He said they will not stop reprocessing uranium. He is rejecting a U.S.-backed European threat that Tehran is about a week away. They have a week to freeze the activities or face a referral to the Security Council for possible sanctions, the U.N. Security Council. Iran's foreign minister said that there is no reason for them to stop. They are operating with the transparency required of them by the International Atomic Energy Agency. Now, this is where it gets scary again. The assumption of Europe and the U.S. is that they are making weapons under the guise of energy production. I mean, that's the assumption. The Iranian foreign minister said, quote, if a political decision is made to refer Iran to the U.N. Security Council, it will be entering a lose-lose game. It will have its own certain consequences and will affect Iran's decisions. We prefer that such a game is not played, unquote, the lose-lose game.
Yeah, it kind of sounds a little
Al-Qaeda-ish, dude. what it sounds like, it's like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do about it?
And see, when you have this whole preemptive studying thing going on, the Iranians know this is happening,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to say to the United States, and they will say to the United Nations, more importantly, how can this government, how can the American government tell us that we can't produce nuclear materials for electricity when they're plotting possibly to bomb us?
Well, who the hell knows what's going on? I mean, who knows what the religious alignment between Iraq and Iran is going to be? Who knows if what we're looking at here is the slow development of a collective front, of an Islamic front that is going to start to manifest itself as a national front? This may turn out to look a lot like the Cold War between Russia and America.
Well, yeah, and what people need to really pay very close attention to here is that a lot of this is in response to the neocon death cult's view of how the Middle East should be configured. Now, the Islamic fundamentalists have got their own view of how the Middle East ought to be configured. Which one's going to win?
Oh, boy. I guess we'll wait for the results. It's 57 past the hour. When we come back, we're going to read you some quotes and engage you on a call level. Maybe we'll even figure out something to give away. I don't know. Maybe a donut or something. All right, so stick around. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. Good morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Man, I hate to swallow food like medicine. I didn't time it right coming back from the break. I got a mouthful of bran muffin.
Like,
man, I got to swallow this quick and wash it down with some coffee. It was good, but, you know, I would have enjoyed chewing it for a few minutes, Riley. So, moving on. Kalo, what's the matter? You all right, buddy? I haven't talked to you all morning. Is everything okay with Kalo?
Yes, I'm great.
Chris Lopresto. Kalo, the Costco ho, have not received any care packages from Costco from you lately.
Uh-huh.
Did you watch Downfall?
No, I haven't.
I give you the Hitler movie of the century, and you don't watch it.
Oh, well, I've been looking for apartments and stuff, so I've been very busy. Oh, and my girlfriend and I are probably breaking up. And, yeah.
All right, so that's all very good.
What about the Hitler movie?
Yeah, I mean, the Hitler movie is, you got to watch the Hitler movie.
I'll squeeze it
what
in,
you
trust
you
me.
Breaking up with her? What is that about?
I don't know.
You're not going to break
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I think I am, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Had
yeah.
enough?
Yeah, I think I have, actually.
All right.
So, wow, yeah. he's good going times. Public, too.
So, all right, so you're not really moving. You've been forced to move.
No, I'm moving. She'd stay with me forever, but I want to move.
Oh, my God, this sounds like it's pretty complicated. But getting back to the Hitler movie, I watch it soon because I need it back. I'm obsessed with the movie.
I understand.
This is Hitler in the bunker during the fall of Berlin. It is an insane bit of filmmaking, let me tell you. Can I just tell you that right now? Let's move on. The Hurricane Katrina response, obviously horrendous. We've discussed that, but we're going to be reading some quotes here from the entire weird kind of confused and ambitious event of politicians and critics and journalists trying to capitalize somehow or trying to assess the situation that was the aftermath of the Katrina. And some of them are just ridiculous. Some of them revealing just the complete incompetence and, you know, undertow, not undertow, the subtext of what Republicans stand for. And it certainly isn't for people. Certainly not people in need. But we will be reading some of those. So if you want to call in and try to identify some quotes, that's going to come up in just a second. Let's go to a, talk a little bit about what's going on the ground down there in New Orleans. President Bush flew to New Orleans on Sunday to spend the night aboard the USS Iwo Jima.
Yes.
He likes to sleep on boats. He likes to do things that children like to do.
Well, he likes to be near the military.
Yeah.
You know, he likes to be, remember the aircraft carrier, you know, people in uniform for whatever reasons this guy gravitates to.
I'll tell you, all he did on his vacation, he's like a male anorexic. He's one of these, like, strange Atkins male anorexic people because he's all lean. I can tell that he must have just, you know, gotten home on vacation and said, I'm too fat. I got to lose some weight. Where's my bike? Don't give me any more of those donuts. But he definitely looks like he's completely obsessed with himself, and that's pretty clear in terms of how he treats other people. The Louis Armstrong New Orleans International Airport reopened for cargo traffic Sunday, and limited passenger service was expected to resume on Tuesday. Starting Monday, owners of businesses in the Central Commercial District will be able to get temporary passes into the city so they can retrieve some, you know, records or equipment or things that they need to make payroll. In talking about the death toll, this is something that you're going to see from Republicans in the next couple weeks, is that because people were so freaked out initially about the possibility of death, the numbers were extreme, not unlike with 9/11.
Absolutely.
That the assumption initially with 9/11 that there could be up to 30,000 people dead, from
yes.
what I recall. So now these numbers are being used by talking heads, Republican talking points, as they're going to be used to try to erase the fact that this administration dropped the ball completely and did not care about the people of New Orleans. They are going to be used to sort of say, hey, it wasn't that bad. It
yeah.
wasn't that bad.
An acceptable level of risk. And this is what we're seeing as New Orleans begins to dry out, as New Orleans begins to dig out. Each success Bush is trying to take credit for,
mm-hmm.
whether it's every drop of water that's being drained out of the city, whether it's the help that's coming, again, in many instances, despite the federal government's best efforts to block them. Remember, we did a story at the end of last week, Mark, where there were firefighters who had tried to get to New Orleans and wound up in Atlanta.
That's right. And the thing is that obviously, you know, we're happy that the death toll did not reach, you know, devastating numbers in terms of what they were talking about. I don't even want to give the number because I don't want to put it out there into the world to be used as some way to disregard what happened there. I mean, you know, what happened, you know, on the ground, you know, in response to Katrina was just mind-blowing. I mean, FEMA, you know, was blocking relief efforts. They turned away experienced firefighters. They wouldn't let the Red Cross deliver food. They turned back citizens' boats from delivering aid. First responders urged not to respond to hurricane impact areas unless dispatched by state and local authorities. And they had a plan in place, a national response plan that that Larry Johnson brought to our attention last week, the counterterrorism expert. They had a plan in place that would enable them to do whatever they wanted. The bottom line is, not only did they not care about the people in New Orleans, but they saw this as a money-making possibility. That is proved by the fact that Joe Alba, the guy who used to be the FEMA head, who is now a lobbyist, whose clients include Halliburton and Shaw Incorporated, are two of the biggest contractors that are going to get reconstruction bids, reconstruction deals post, you know, now,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, and this is the way this administration, this White House operates. In Iraq, who did they contract? The same group of, certainly when it comes to Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root and those people, the same companies. And they're not doing low-bid, open competitive bidding on this stuff. They are giving these things out. They are doling it out like Christmas candy to their friends and associates through people who have worked for the president before, then gone to work for the federal government, and now are in the private sector cleaning up.
Yeah, and Michael Brown, the director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, sent an email last week to his family and friends whining about the fact that everyone was picking on him. Poor Michael Brown. I'll read you the email. quote, I don't mind the negative press. Well, actually, I do, but I try to ignore it. But it is really wearing out the family. No wonder people don't go into public service. This country is devouring itself. The 24-hour news cycle is numbing our ability to think for ourselves. That's right, Michael. End quote, by the way. That's right. It must be the fault of the media. It's the news reporting on you know, my oversights. It really is at fault here. It's incredible that even that, the lack of contrition or self-realization that this guy is capable of, that in a candid email about his pain, he blames the news media.
Look, he's waiting for one of those private sector gigs like his boy Arbaugh.
Yeah, I don't think he's got the brains.
Oh, no, no.
Buddy.
Let me tell you something. Even though he messed this up, even though everybody knows he messed this up, he will find work. That's the nature of the political game that these people play. And it wouldn't be fair to say that George W. Bush is the only president who's done this, yeah, but he's taken it to a new level. That guy Kaufman that talked about how long it's going to take. You know how many presidents this guy worked for at EPA? Been there for 35 years. Worked for seven presidents, seven of them, including Bush's father. And what is he saying? He is saying that the ineptitude of these people is going to kill more folks, and it's going to take 10 years for them to clean this up.
Because it's going to be so toxic. He's talking about Hugh Kaufman. This is a guy that recently did an interview with a British paper that clearly he's not going to... the truth is more important than his job.
Because his time in government service is limited.
Well, thank God for guys like that. I'll tell you that right now. So here's a couple of quotes, and I'm going to just start our little quote bash here. But here's one. Louisiana is a city that is largely underwater. That's a quote from who? Here's another one. This one kills me. This one, where is it? Where is it? Here we go. Quote, we finally cleaned up public housing in New Orleans. We couldn't do it, but God did. End quote.
Yeah.
Who said that? These people are heinous. The first one was Michael Chertoff. The second one was Representative Richard Baker from Louisiana. And he was saying that to lobbyists. He didn't think he was being heard. And I'll tell you, the one thing I learned over the weekend was just how closely this administration bungled, 9/11. How that could have been possibly stopped, most likely stopped, if they just heeded the advice of people that knew what they were talking about. August 6th, the presidential daily briefing said that, they were going to attack. And just like this, people have known about the levee problem and the hurricane problems in New Orleans for years. And these idiots decided not to look into it. And I really think on some level it's because they saw 9/11 coming, they looked towards Iraq. They saw this hurricane coming, they looked towards the possibility of moving most of the poor people out of New Orleans and rebuilding it to cater to their base. That's what I think.
I got to tell you, man, I have started to personalize this. I'm beginning to think that this kind of incompetence is like unique to the baby boom generation or something. I'm starting to feel like it's my generation that really has not been able to get their brains around dealing with some of these things. I mean, we have previous generations dealt with world wars and a whole bunch of other things, and maybe it's not fair to compare, but where does the stunning level of incompetence come from?
It comes from people that really are completely self-involved and only care about making money and actually believe in this sort of neocon death cult adapt or die policy. I had arguments with guys this weekend just about how they could go down there and blame the people of New Orleans their own
for
condition.
Yeah, blame the victim.
Well, it's genocide through negligence. It's like they want to kill people. They don't mind if the poor die. They don't mind. 866-303-2270 is our number. If you can tell me who said this, I will be happy to talk to you. We have no awards. We're not giving away anything. Quote, this is the largest disaster in the history of the United States over an area twice the size of Europe. People have to understand this is a big, big problem, end quote. Who said that? We'll start with that one. It's 17 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio, 866-303-2270. It's Morning Sedition.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Feels good to be a gangster.
21 past the hour, America Radio's Morning Tradition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, Chris, we're going to have to get some new bumper music up there. I know I brought in a lot more bumper music. I'm getting tired of the same old bumper music.
Okay.
Is that... Also, dude, here's another question. You know, when Riley and I are having a conversation about politics or whatever we're doing, and you and Brendan McDonald and Dan Pashman have a little IM party where everyone's giggling, how do you think that makes me feel? What exactly was going on with the little IM party? I don't like this whole IM, this crap with the IM, that you know, you can be having a perfectly reasonable conversation with somebody, yet three other guys are sitting there playing on their computers like a bunch of children, laughing their heads off.
Sorry, Dad.
Yeah. And, of course, I get insecure. I'm like, Maron, I'm thinking just sitting there going, what's wrong with Maron? He's such an idiot. Listen to Maron talk. He's just an idiot talking.
Oh, my God.
Is that
God.
What you were doing?
Yeah, pretty much. And we're going to keep on doing that for the next 2 hours.
Well, that's good, because I'll be gone in about half hour. So you're going to be sitting here, IMing about me during Springer Show here in New York. Elsewhere, it's other shows, apparently, in Boston. I don't know. What? Hey, the Carolinas might be hit by a Category 1 hurricane that didn't look like it was going to come in, but might, according to meteorologists.
That's Ophelia?
Yes. The governor declared a state of emergency, and I just wanted to reach out and say FEMA might want to make note of this, how long hurricane season is. And, just that it happens throughout the season, know, and that you might want to prepare a little bit.
Just a touch.
Yeah. So let's get into some of these quotes. We've got some calls on the line, 866-303-2270. These are just a list of quotes that were compiled by someone ambitious in terms of around what went on in the aftermath of the hurricane. By the way, we're going to have our movie guy, David Poland, from Movie City News, is going to be on the line in just a little while. He's up there at the Toronto Film Festival to let us know, what we need to see, what we shouldn't see. I want to ask him about the movie that I saw. I went to a screening of the Lord of War.
Oh, okay.
The Nicolas Cage movie.
It's
pretty intense, man. There's some good stuff in that. I think later in the week we're actually going to be talking to the director and one of the stars of that film. I'm very excited about that. Also, we will be broadcasting live from Elmo Restaurant this Friday morning. Elmo is on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. We'll be there from 6 to 9 as usual. And if you were at the show over at the New School, man, we had a good time.
Yeah.
What a great time to work a big stage.
Yeah, man. And, when we started early that morning, I said, oh, man, there's only going to be a few people in here. It's a gigantic auditorium. But by the time we finished, man, the place was rocking.
Yeah, there was actually two guys thrown out for snorting blow.
Snorting blow. Big up to Neil, man Neil.
Yeah, Neil.
On the case.
It was hilarious. Yeah, our security guy, Neil, didn't have to deal with Franny.
Not this time.
The old woman who writes comedy. Fanny, I keep saying
Fanny.
Fanny. Maybe that's why she didn't show up. Because I've been...
You insulted me.
All right, let's take a call here. Here's a couple of quotes. How about this one? I also want to encourage anyone who is affected by Hurricane Katrina to make sure their children are in school. Who said that? Do you know? All right, how about this one? I don't want to alarm anybody that, New Orleans is filling up like a bowl. That's just not happening. That's a guy named Bill Loki, FEMA's New Orleans coordinator. But who said this? Quote, I also want to encourage anybody who was affected by Hurricane Katrina to make sure their children are in school, end quote. Let's take some calls. Tom in Oregon. How are you, Tom?
Hey, all right, Mark. How you doing, buddy?
All right.
Hey, I think that one was definitely George.
The Katrina quote?
He got the name wrong, and his only thing was school, which is like, leave every child behind. I think that's got to be George.
Well, you're close, because the apple doesn't fall far, if you know what I'm saying. It was his mother.
Oh, mommy.
Yeah. Oh, it was his wife? Oh, that's worse.
Yeah.
It was Laura Bush.
It's a little woman.
It was Laura Bush. Sorry. But I will read you the Barbara Bush quote, because you definitely, because I screwed up. That was Barbara Bush's quote was, quote, what I'm hearing, which is sort of scary, is that they all want to stay in Texas. Everybody is so overwhelmed by the hospitality. And so many of the people in the arena here, were underprivileged anyway. So this, and she chuckles here, yes, this is working very well for them. That was a former First Lady Barbara Bush. It was actually Laura Bush. I always get them confused, who said Katrina, Hurricane Katrina.
So does George.
He does too? All right, here. How about this quote? This is the, I already said that one. As of Saturday, Blanco still had not declared a state of emergency, the senior Bush official said. Washington Post, that's not a good one. Come on. Come on.
You want one?
Yeah.
You want one?
Yeah.
All right, here's one.
Yeah.
Well, I think if you look at what actually happened, I remember on Tuesday morning picking up the newspapers and I saw headlines, New Orleans dodged a bullet. Because if you recall, the storm moved to the east and then continued on and appeared to pass with considerable damage, but nothing worse.
Okay, Adam, streaming in New Jersey. Who said that?
Well, I know that one wasn't Bush because he doesn't read the newspaper. So.
Right.
I don't know. I'm going to say probably Dick Cheney.
Who was it, Riley?
It was Michael Chertoff.
Oh, again.
The Homeland Security Czar, the guy who's supposed to know these things.
Thanks a lot for calling, Adam. So we're going to let me finish that one because I'm an idiot. I'm like I'm drifting here because I there was too many quotes. Quote, as of Saturday, Blanco still had not declared a state of emergency, the senior Bush official said. Washington Post not bothering to fact check the blatant lie peddled by the Bush administration as part of its attempts to pin blame on state and local officials when, in fact, the emergency declaration had been made on Friday. So that's not a guess. That's just some information. It is 27 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. David Poland will be with us to talk about movies momentarily. Stay with us.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Far past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I got a little disjointed that last segment, you know what I mean? Got my had my head in the wrong place there, Chris. You all right? You off the IM? You all right? You with me here?
Yeah,
are we on the same page?
It's part of the music's fault.
Yeah, no, you know what? It's all your fault, Chris. It's all your fault.
Someone has to take the blame.
All right,
it's
good.
Cool.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's you know what? I'm not going to blame anybody. You know what, Chris? You know what I'm going to do right
now?
I'm not going to shoulder some responsibility. You know, it was my fault, okay? It was partly my fault, partly your fault. Riley had nothing to do with it. And that's all there is to it. That's the way this works. The Toronto International Film Festival is in full spin right now. Last year, the festival launched such films as Ray and Hotel Rwanda. To find out what's percolating there this time around, we welcome back the editor of Movie City News and a columnist at thehotbutton.com. David Poland joins us from Toronto. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. I feel like I should take responsibility for something. I don't know what.
You should take responsibility. Now, what, did Robin Wright blow a fuse yesterday?
I missed that.
That's her last name, isn't it?
Yeah, Robin Wright Penn.
Robin Wright Penn.
Yeah. Robin Wright Penn, you know, apparently just got just snapped and got pissed off that people were giving her her husband a hard time for doing what he wanted to do and helping people out.
Oh, well, I thought perhaps she was saving some people on Bloor Street here in Toronto. Oh.
Wait, how's it,
hot dog vendors.
What's it like up there? Is it crazy? Is it like just a big cluster bleep?
Well, it's a constant cluster bleep. I can't even actually pronounce it properly.
That's all right.
It's a lovely... there's one hotel here, the Intercontinental, where they do all the press interviews. And if you go in back, there's usually kind of this patio area. And yesterday there was this group of Ava Longoria and Bryce Howard in a kind of semi-there dress. And,
mm-hmm.
All these actors chattering away constantly, Terry Gilliam and all this at the same time.
Uh-huh.
You're kind of watching this, and it's kind of this surreal episode of, you know, 2020 or something. It just won't stop going.
It just goes to show you that no matter what point anyone is in their career, they are still willing to kiss ass and you know, try and to, you know, not look desperate.
Yes, everybody except for William Hurt, who was actually quite brilliant in the midst of all this. He actually was the only sane person.
Really? I was a huge fan of his, and I haven't seen him in a long time. What's he up to up there?
He had a great performance in a movie called A History of Violence by David Cronenberg.
Oh, really?
Really? A month or so.
When is that going to be released? I'm a big Cronenberg fan.
It's actually coming out, I think, in 2 weeks or so.
And is it a great Cronenberg film?
I think it's the best Cronenberg film.
Get out!
I think it's a culminative work. It's like his entire career kind of came to this.
This was it? This is what brought it all together?
I think so. I mean, you have bloody ears, stumps on the floor, but you also have a great deal of political information. And basically, it's a great story about what, you know, violence in our lives and what violence ultimately means and how we try to hide from it, but we can't escape it. And
so is he off of the machine-flesh interface thing?
There is no machine-flesh-word interface in this movie. But there's actually a great sex scene on a pair of stairs with Maria Bello and Viggo Mortensen. So
wow.
People can go just for that.
And yeah, and he's, you know, he's in good shape, that guy, so I'm
yeah,
sure it's
Ed
energetic.
Harris is in it also, and Bill Hurt is incredible in about a very small performance.
Did Ed Harris, was he acting earnest?
He was acting earnest and one-eyed. He actually has a scar over his left eye in this movie, so very serious, very bald.
Now, David, let's talk a bit about the film festival itself. Some film festivals are deal-making film festivals where people come and they try to get distribution deals and that sort of thing. Toronto just it seems to be more about hype. Most of these films already have deals, no?
Yes, most of these films actually have distribution already in America, so that's it's a different kind of festival. There's actually only one film that really, really seems to be a serious deal movie, and in that case, they made a deal for the movie. It's a new producer, and then he decided about 3 hours later he changed his mind and wanted to go to another studio.
Oh,
without fighting about it.
So he went public with the deal he made, and then he said, I'm sorry, someone...
No, he did his deal, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning when they went to bed, or actually at midnight when they finally went to bed and shook hands and said, thank you, we're so glad to work together, blah, blah, blah. And then about 3 hours later, the phone rang, and he said, oh, by the way, I'm going to Fox Searchlight.
Oh, what movie is this?
This is called Thank You for Smoking, which is actually a very funny movie. It's a satire on a tobacco lobbyist starring Aaron Eckhart.
Isn't that interesting? Satire and tobacco lobbyists, and I just saw that film, Lord of War, which I don't know if it can be officially classified as satire, but it definitely had a dark comedy tone to it that kind of broke apart towards the end.
Yeah, remember Deal of the Century?
Yeah.
So that was the same kind of thing, same kind of problem.
Except that was
Gregory Hines in this one.
But that was almost slapstick,
yeah.
From what I recall. Well, let's talk a little bit about the films you've seen up there. You saw Brokeback Mountain. You saw that?
I did. I'm on the wrong side of the cowboys in this one.
This is the gay cowboy film.
I will not get on my stomach. Period.
You will. This is the gay cowboy film. who's in it again?
It's Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger.
Right, and Heath Ledger, right.
And they're old cow hand in the Rio Grande, but it's not the hand that matters.
Right. Now, what was your problem with the movie, aside from that clearly it frightens your sexuality?
It's of course, you can't say anything about this movie without it being an issue of your sexuality. I didn't like the story structure. Nah, you're a gay basher. That's pretty much how it goes. I personally just think it's very thin. It's set in 1963, 64,
mm-hmm.
And it's basically these two men who have this affair on a mountain, even though one of them clearly is bisexual, one of them clearly claims to be heterosexual. And then they spend the next 20 years complaining about not being able to get together.
So,
because,
but
you know, you can't do that in the old West.
Yeah, right. But obviously it was done. It must have been done a lot more than just this one movie.
Well, my issue, I think, in part, is that, you know, I've actually been criticized by some people for saying, you know, well, Stonewall happened in 1969 and there was movement and, you know, this movie takes place up through 1980 or so.
Right.
So my thing is, you know, at some point you got to stop complaining and do something about it.
Yeah, was any of that referenced in the film? Was it like? Well, I'm just saying that like the real gay revolution.
No.
Real gay, okay.
Nothing happened. I mean, basically nobody says anything. Heath Ledger's performance is basically. That's how he speaks in all movies. Right?
Is that so? It gets that graphic on something's actually in his mouth.
Yeah. No, only his foot.
All right.
But there is the flip, you know, there's basically it's one big sex scene in the first act, and then they never have sex again that we know of. So.
But it's got to be visually somewhat pleasing. Ang Lee's no,
it's
no hack.
I mean, it's a beautiful movie. To be fair, and I'm being kind of flip about the whole thing, people who have coming out issues, whether they be straight or gay or whatever, who feel they've held something in and have been able to have the love that they want and that kind of thing, seem to take it very seriously and have a great romance with it. Personally, I found it, you know, I find romance more interesting when people actually do something about it.
Well, and also, you know, I was talking to somebody, maybe it actually takes some of the homoerotic subtexts that are in, you know, the history of Westerns and puts it right out there.
Yeah, and I think also that people bring their own homoerotic subtext to it. So,
yeah. Well, okay, so I see what you're saying. You're saying that I'm hiding something within myself and I'm attracted to cowboys.
Have you seen the movie?
Huh? No, I haven't seen the movie yet.
Would you like to meet Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, there you go.
What are you, hey, Poland, you call me gay? Is that what's going on here?
Who's this?
Mark Maron.
Actually, I sat right behind Jake last night at the screening of Bee Season, which is a Searchlight movie coming out with Richard Gere. In which, as far as I know, nobody was gay.
So you were sitting behind Jake Gyllenhaal?
I was sitting behind Jake Gyllenhaal, and I just kept on, you know, woo-ee!
Really? Did you give him a reach around?
Huh?
Did you give him a reach around?
My arms aren't quite that long, but I was thinking the whole time. But he was there actually supporting his mom, who wrote the movie, who's changed her name from Naomi Foner to Naomi Foner Gyllenhaal, oddly enough, when her kids became famous.
Oh, that's wild.
So,
do you like his sister?
In what way?
Maggie? Well, I mean, just in terms of being you think she's a good actress?
I think she's a very good actress, and she has a very nice boyfriend. Peter Sarsgaard, who's going to be in Jarhead in a few weeks, and he's a great guy.
He's a good actor, too, I think.
Yes, and they make a lovely couple.
So what else do I need to see from up there?
Well, the great thing about Toronto is that you can skip most of the movies that were here.
Uh-huh.
It's been kind of a painful festival. Actually, the biggest pain in the festival has been Elizabethtown, which is Paramount's
Cameron Crowe. Yeah. That's my old buddy. You know, he gave me my big movie break.
Well, I adore Cameron Crowe, and I adore his work, and I just sat there with my jaw on the ground during the entire picture, as did most people.
It was that bad?
It was very not good.
Did you see Almost Famous?
I did. I love the longer version, actually.
Yeah, in the longer version, my part's much bigger. Did you? I have a very memorable part in that movie.
Well, you know, your part is very important to me, Mark.
David, I got to ask you, out of all of these films that are coming through this film festival, putting aside whether they're any good, which one do you think will have the biggest box office?
That's a really horrifying question.
Riley's good at those.
Yeah, the thing is that box office and this festival are not... So, I mean, ultimately, the biggest box office might be something like The Corpse Bride, which really doesn't generally belong at this festival, even though it's a nice little movie. It's really not, I think Flight Plan, which was...
Corpse Bride. Now, is that the new movie exploring necrophilia?
The Corpse Bride, yes. It's a kid's movie about necrophilia. we also had a documentary about Siamese twins who become punk stars. That was very popular.
It's a documentary?
It's a fake documentary from the guys who did the Terry Gilliam documentary, Lost in La Mancha.
Okay. Oh, yeah. What happened to that film? Is that even available?
It's on IFC.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, Lost in La Mancha?
Yeah,
that's on IFC now. But Terry Gilliam's been running around in Tideland, actually, in which there are people actually talking about Terry Gilliam should be put on charges for what he did to the kid in Tideland.
Oh, really?
Who opens the movie by making a heroin needle for her dad.
Oh, wow.
So apparently,
so just from that, psychological abuse?
Yeah, there was like some what you would get an 8-year-old to do on a set probably should be illegal. And then of course sitting through the movie even more so, but. The other one that was fabulous is Guy Ritchie's new movie.
Oh, really?
The guy who brought us Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels brought us a movie called Revolver, in which he managed to be both a hack and pretentious at the same time.
Wow. So he's been working towards that with that. What was the other one? Snatch.
He has. Madonna's been taking him to Kabbalah meetings, and they've been
she ruined
him. Together.
She ruined him. Now he's just a houseboy.
How far can they go together?
Oh, well, what a disaster. So can I go back with you just for one second?
Sure.
Because I just picked up the DVD release of Downfall.
Yes.
Which I think is one of the greatest movies of last year, if not all time.
There's nothing like a Hitler comedy.
Really? Matt, was it funny?
No.
All I know, it's the only movie that has ever been made that makes you say things like, oh, poor Hitler.
Right. Oh, that Hitler.
Yeah, did you like that film, though, honestly?
It's an excellent film, and it's a great performance, and the director's moving on to remake Invasion of the Body Snatchers for some reason.
Really?
Yeah.
This is what, number three?
I think it's the third big one, with Nicole Kidman this time.
Well, wow.
But it's going to be different this time because that's the pod is going to be made by Halston.
That's typecasting. The pod's going to be made by Halston Todd.
He's fabulous.
That's weird that he moves that from fascism to body snatching. I guess
The thing is, if you make a good indie movie, then the first thing they do is try to make you make a really bad studio movie. Within about 7 or 8 minutes, you have to make something that will actually make your soul wither.
Yeah. What about the movies right now? I don't know what you talked about with the guys last week, but I saw The Constant Gardener, and I thought it was...
absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it was beautiful to look at. I did you like the pacing? Did you were completely
I think it's a brilliant movie. I mean, I'm a huge Fernando fan.
Me too. But what about the pacing?
I think the work is just pretty stunning.
You didn't think it was slow at all, ever?
Not for me.
Oh.
But, I thought the love story was really what drove that movie, more than the action thing.
No, absolutely. So I thought the acting was great. He's got a beautiful sense of color and movement and framing and everything else. I think he's a genius director. There were just moments where I'm like, have I been in the theater all day? But
what is Constant?
What about
Occasional Gardening?
Anything else out right now that we should definitely see?
Well, the story of Emily Rose is pretty amazing. I mean, it's the third biggest September opening ever.
What?
Wow.
Why don't you even know about that movie?
The Exorcism of Emily Rose, because you're not a teenage girl.
Oh, okay.
If you were a teenage girl, you would have been there this weekend and screaming and yelling.
Well, if I had just known they were going to be there, I probably would have been there.
That's true. You could have gone the whole Michael Jackson. No, actually, those were the teenage girls.
Teenage girls. And anything else I need to see?
No, really nothing. So actually, Flight Plan is coming, and I'm sure that you're into romantic comedies. So I'm sure you're a huge thing.
If someone would make a good one.
Well, Just Like Heaven is coming. It's not bad. If you like Freaky Friday, you'll probably like Just Like Heaven.
All right, David. David Pullen.
Teenage girls.
Yeah. Great talking to you. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, David.
Have a good one, guys.
You take care. You can go to MovieCityNews or thehotbutton.com to see David Pullen's work. You get a sense of who he is. Great talking to him.
Yeah.
We're going to go away now very briefly and come back and try to put a cap on this amazing Monday morning show. It's 47 past the hour, America Radio's Morning's Edition.
Lock the gates! Oh, Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken, king of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
Two past the hour. Let's put this thing down. That's Mark Reilly.
Where?
I'm Mark Maron. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Hey, you know, again, I want to thank everybody that came down to the New School because that was great. Stephen Colbert was funny. Bob Carey was, he got all fired up. And also Sarah Jones was very funny. We just had a great time.
She was great.
Had
yeah.
some fun audience participation stuff. It was just it was a great time. We're going to be broadcasting live from Elmo Restaurant this Friday morning. Elmo is on 7th Avenue between 19th and 20th. We'll be there from 6 to 9 a.m. I'm sure there'll be some coffee and some T-shirts. We'll give you some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But, Bob Carey was pretty profound because I saw him sitting there. He's also the president of the New School, if you don't know. And he was just sitting there very very nice and calm. You know,
and then he laced into these people.
And then, bam, popped it right open, became a senator in a second.
You know what surprised me? I meant to ask him about this. He really seems to have some lingering anger about the way the 9/11 Commission functioned and whether or not people paid any attention to their work.
Yeah, no, I
got that from him on Friday.
And you know what else I got from him is that, you know, there's some part of him that he wants to be he's still a senator.
He wants to get back in the game.
It was almost as if he'd been briefed, man.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about these polls in reaction to and in the aftermath of the storm that was Katrina and the response to that storm. 57% of Americans have lost confidence in government to deal with another natural disaster. 52% do not trust Bush to make right decisions in a crisis. 52%, folks. Bush's job approval overall at a record low of 38%. 66% of this country are dissatisfied with the direction of the country. This is a Newsweek poll.
Yeah.
It's not a crap poll. It's a real deal poll. It's pretty amazing that how quickly things have shifted. And it's also pretty amazing to me that in experiencing yesterday the anniversary of 9/11 and thinking about 9/11 again, you know, they had those powerful lights, the two lights over the weekend.
Yeah.
What do they call those?
Oh,
the tribute,
the Tower of Lights.
Tower of Lights.
It's really, it's these two huge, I guess it must be a series of spotlights that go straight up and kind of do almost an apparition of the Twin Towers all the way up into the stars. And when you see that over New York, I remember they had it up for a long time, a few months there at some point. It's really just an ominous kind of reminder of that we shouldn't forget and what really happened. And the bottom line is in looking at this administration's response to information that could have probably stopped 9/11 from happening, and then looking at the lead up to the disaster that is going on in New Orleans, and in both cases, the administration dropped the ball and did not do what was necessary to protect American lives. And in both cases, they seem to be looking ahead towards profiteering of the situation, one in Iraq through war profiteering, and one down there in New Orleans through reconstruction profiteering, aligning their cronies with the huge multi-billion-dollar contracts to rebuild or do whatever is necessary. This is the scary thing: is that they really believe that people will just forget, and that people will die, and they don't care. They just assume that people will forget.
They're counting on people forgetting, and they're also counting on people not putting the following things together. If this administration can link September 11th with Iraq, then why shouldn't people link September 11th with Katrina?
Mm-hmm.
All right?
I think that's the more appropriate linkage.
I would say so. If you want to talk about governmental incompetence, you have to look at 9/11, not just 9/11, but certainly 9/11 and Katrina as being part and parcel of the same level of incompetence. They knew ahead of time, they knew a month before September 11th, that there was a problem.
It's a tremendous oversight on behalf of this kind of neocon death cult way of thinking, and also some of these, you know, just regular old Republicans that you got to get rid of the federal government and privatize everything. It just doesn't function. Greed gets in the way, and you cannot rely on the private sector to have a plan in place to save regular Americans, because they're only going to be thinking about their profit margins. It's just, it's not the successful the thought process to go through. The federal government should be in the business of you know, saving the people who are in trouble, or helping people, you know, help themselves.
Absolutely. It's all those folks who went down there from the New York area, and I'm talking about all the people who went to New Orleans to help out, the firemen, everyone. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. About 350 guys from the New York Fire Department went down. A couple of those guys were actually involved with the...
September 11th, absolutely.
One of the cats who went down to New Orleans was in the North Tower as it started to collapse and got out. And these guys, they not only do they have a bond with each other, but they really do care about people's lives and saving people's lives. And that's a type of camaraderie that very few people can understand. I'll
absolutely
tell you that. So tomorrow, we've got a couple of interesting guests. We've got, Vicky Oliver is going to tell us how you know you're about to get fired. She's written a book.
They cut the mic?
Yeah. It's very insightful. It's going to be a fun interview.
Yeah, and Catherine Cryer is going to be with us tomorrow as well to talk about wrongdoing in American justice. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on